Radio Prague News.
The Cabinet backs a new gun law. Jiří Menzelt is to be honoured at the Berlinale, and Czechs tip to win 4 Winter Olympic medals. A proposed new gun law on ownership was approved by the Czech Cabinet on Wednesday. The proposal aims to fit in with new European Union demands. It introduces 2 new categories for firearms for which permits are needed: historic guns and air guns, with the length of permits expected to be shortened compared to the current practice. The number of bullets or cartridges that can be kept with weapons will also be curbed. The Civic Democratic Party has said it will oppose the proposed change, which has to be approved by Parliament. The Czech Republic's EU Commissioner, Věra Jourová, has been rapped over the knuckles by the European Union's Ombudswoman. She said that in a radio interview over the so-called Stork's Nest affair, and on other occasions, Jourová made comments which were inappropriate with her post as a European Commissioner, and she would have been wiser not to have commented, according to the Ombudswoman, Emily O'Reilly. The Stork's Nest affair focuses on alleged abuse of EU subsidies by ANO leader Andrej Babiš and outgoing Prime Minister. Jourová was an ANO-nominated minister before being appointed Czech Commissioner. Czech film director Jiří Menzel is to be honoured at this year's Berlin Film Festival. Menzel is to be given the Berlinale's Kamera Berlinale Award for his contribution to comedy and the Czech New Wave. The film, The Interpreter, in which he acts, will also be given its worldwide premiere at the festival. Past winners of the award have included Clint Eastwood and Sidney Pollack. The Czech Constitutional Court has cancelled a 200,000 crown fine imposed on commercial broadcaster Nova for screening a programme with fashion recommendations for what and what not to wear in church on a very hot day. The fine was originally imposed by the State Council for Radio and Television Broadcast and had been confirmed by a previous court. The Constitutional Court said it believed that fashion recommendations were covered by freedom of expression and could be regarded as infotainment. The original broadcast was screened in 2012 during a big heatwave. And Czechs are tipped to pick up 4 medals at the Winter Olympics being staged in South Korea by the news agency Associated Press. It sees snowboarder Ester Ledecká winning gold, with speed skater Martina Sablíková winning silver in the 5,000 metres event. Czech biathlon competitors are also expected to win medals. In 2014, the Czechs won 8 medals, of which 2 were gold and 4 silver. And finally, a look at the weather. The weather on Thursday will be cloudy with some sunny intervals. Snow could fall in the centre of the country. Top temperatures will range between -1 and 2 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, a framework for regular national referenda is a bit closer. Ice hockey star Jaromír Jágr looks ahead to Czech Olympic chances. And we talk to a Czech with rocketing ambitions. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech Republic is a small step closer to a bill on general referendums after 4 parties in the Chamber of Deputies agreed they will back a proposal by Freedom and Direct Democracy in a first reading. The parties in negotiations, including ANO, have a constitutional majority necessary to make the changes. However, they remain at odds over what form these will take. Jan Wellinger reports.
ANO, Freedom and Direct Democracy, the Pirate Party, and the Communists are strange bedfellows given their slew of differences on numerous issues. But one thing they have agreed on, at least in principle, is to try and pass a bill on general referendums. Government party ANO and the other 3 want the public to be able to call referendums on important issues, but as usual, the devil is in the details, and these will now have to be hammered out. What has been agreed so far is that the results of referendums should be binding, not just a recommendation. The next question is how many public signatures would be needed to initiate a public referendum. Freedom and Direct Democracy, headed by Tomio Okamura, has proposed 100,000 signatures. But ANO, which heads the current minority government, is looking at a much higher number, around 800,000. Speaking to journalists on Tuesday, Freedom and Democracy leader Tomi Okamura made clear he would be happier if the number was lower.
I think the most common average under discussion was a minimum of 500,000 to 700,000, which of course seems high to us.
The number of voters who would need to take part for a referendum to be valid also remains unresolved and under discussion. The parties discussed between 0 and 35% participation, but there is a caveat, at least for the Pirate Party, that the minimum would be far higher, a qualified majority of 60%, in matters of international importance, such as whether to leave or stay in the European Union. ANO rejects that a new bill on referendums would allow a plebiscite on EU or NATO membership at all, while Freedom and Direct Democracy and the Communists are seeking just that, a referendum on EU membership, the so-called Chexit, and on NATO. Membership in NATO, as has well been publicised, has been a stick in the eye for the Communist Party from day one. But party leader Wojciech Filip indicated he would accept an alternative if a consensus were not achieved.
We are, of course, not excluding bills on special referenda if there is no political will to include the possibility in the bill on general referendums.
Negotiations are expected to continue on the matter next week, and reaching a consensus could go some way in determining whether ANO leader Andrei Babiš is more successful in his second attempt at forming a viable government. The bill on general referendums is seen as a key ingredient for at least some of the parties to give his cabinet backing the second time around. In his first attempt in January, Mr. Babiš put together a minority government made up of ANO MPs and experts, which fell well short of securing a majority in the lower house.
Jan Wellinger reporting there. Now, Jaromir Jagr was one of the stars of the Czech squad that took ice hockey gold at the Nagano Olympics, which began 20 years ago on Wednesday. The veteran forward admits playing again at this year's Olympics did cross his mind and says the absence of NHL players increases Czech's chances of repeating the famous victory of 1998. Ian Willoughby reports.
Otevíráme zlatou bránu olympijského turnaje. Jsme olympijští vítězové.
Czech TV commentary from what, for many Czech fans, is still the country's greatest sporting moment ever, when the Czech Republic took gold in the 1998 Olympic ice hockey final. Among the stars of that team was Jaromír Jágr, who last week returned from the NHL to join Kladno. Speaking at his new club, the all-time great said the Czechs had been spurred at Nagano by a 7-1 defeat at the hands of lowly Germany in 1996.
We took the Olympics kind of like a revenge, and plus we had a Dominik Hasek. He was the best goaltender in the world, and you know, everybody knows in the tournaments like that, in the short tournaments, you need a goaltender. And you know, when you have a good goalie, then you know it's half of the game. It's won before you even started. And plus most of the guys who were on the team, they play first or second line on their team, so nobody really expect us to do anything from the media, but inside in our team, we really believe we can do that. You know, 98 was pretty special team.
Though Jágr will turn 46 during the Pyeongchang Games, many Czech fans would love to see him in action again for the national side. He says he did consider returning at one point, but a knee injury ruled out that possibility.
When I was practicing here this summer, and I was still without a contract, I didn't know if I'm going to go to NHL or not, and I was kind of hoping that if I stay here and play in the Czech League or somewhere in Europe, I would get used to the big guys. And I felt like if I'm going to be good enough to help the team, there is a possibility to play. But right now, I'm not ready, I'm not good, and I didn't play many games, so not a chance.
As for the current Czech team, Jaromír Jágr says the absence of NHL players from this year's Olympics boosts their chances of repeating the success of 1998.
Personally, I think we have a pretty good chance. There's a lot of good players we have in Europe, and especially KHL, and even here in the Czech League. I think we have a better chance than if the NHL players would play. So Czech team is one of my favorites to win the tournament, beside Russia and Canada.
And the Czech Republic will face the hosts South Korea in their first game in Pyeongchang on Thursday next week.
Ian Willoughby reporting there on the ice hockey chances of the Czechs. Now, there are a handful of Czechs who are part of a booming high-tech new economy on the US West Coast, and more specifically in Silicon Valley. But few could boast a career that over the last decade has been littered with the names of so many of the large multinational US companies in the forefront of technology and its applications, as Lynn native David Pavlik. His career has jumped from Microsoft to Amazon and multinational film company Netflix, and currently he's with the private company at the cutting edge of the new space race, SpaceX. David Pavlik was recently back in the Czech Republic to talk about his experience with some of the US's top companies and take part in some workshops. One of those sessions was organised by the Czech German Chamber of Commerce. Pavlik found time afterwards to talk about his rocketing career and how his computer science studies at Brno's Masaryk University and business studies in Britain helped provide the foundation for his following career. Pavlik began with a broad brush update of how he got to the US in the first place and a job at Microsoft's headquarters on the outskirts of Seattle.
So I started, it was almost 10 years ago since I moved to the US, and before that I worked 3 years here at Microsoft Prague. In Microsoft Prague I was part of the international team, and after a couple of years I was always interested in working abroad, so I actually asked my manager if there would be an opportunity in Redmond in Washington State, and I happened to be an internal transfer. So the benefit was that I was already part of the international team, so I could continue with my role over there.
The role was a familiar one, but all the same, Pavlik found that something was missing, and that was the use of his basic technical skills, which he believes are fundamental to any career.
At Microsoft, I was responsible for the program project management for the international support sites and support sites for their developers and IT professionals. That's the role. And so we were building sites for these people in many different languages. So coordinating to basically localization, selecting the content, making sure they have a good customer experience. And my skills I was utilizing at the time was primarily project management, program management. And as I mentioned earlier, I was really missing the technical part. And I was able to kind of step up my technical game more when I joined Amazon and later in Netflix.
Amazon, which he joined in 2011, was well on the way to becoming one of the world leaders in e-commerce. Pavlik stayed there around a year. Netflix, the pay-for-film channel, famed for its political thriller series House of Cards, was still finding its feet. The check arrived as it began to confirm its early promise, and actor Kevin Spacey was soon to make his name as the cynical political manipulator. Pavlik had a different role, part of the technical team making sure that the Netflix film offer and pages, with around 3,000 changes a day, were running smoothly.
I went to Netflix, where I was responsible for coordinating all aspects of the cloud platform. So basically all other teams can develop and deploy to this platform. And also I was a liaison for AWS.
In fact, Pavlik also had a special mission to test the whole Netflix software infrastructure to see if he could bring that particular house of cards down. He was successful once or twice, and the lessons learned helped to make the system even more robust.
That was probably one of the most exciting part of my career, where I was responsible for shooting down Netflix infrastructure, and we were basically testing how Netflix infrastructure is resilient against failure. So it was a lot of fun and a lot of great learning out of it.
Normally, Pavlik would not have been looking for a change, but the opportunity to join a company at the technology cutting edge, the space rocket firm created by Elon Musk, SpaceX, was not to be missed. The first set of interviews did not land a job, but he later got a call back telling him that a more suitable post had opened up. Seduced by the prospect of being part of a mission to change human history and development, Pavlik did not hesitate. Musk had come to a rapidly evolving space sector, with the role of the US space agency NASA narrowing to become a buyer of space services and technology offers, and its place taken by private companies rapidly expanding. And Musk, who was also at the same time seeking to revolutionise the electric car market, had come to space with ideas which were more than sky high. He wanted to set the foundations for man to really conquer space and eventually colonise other planets, not just to be a temporary presence. Part of the path would mean cutting the costs of space travel, and that would involve changing the economies of the most buoyant part of the market, the business of launching rockets into space to carry communications and other satellites. That market had been dominated by the European company Ariane and Russian and more latterly Chinese state agencies. But the concept was founded on one-time, one-use rockets, which escalated costs. To Musk, this made about as much sense as aircraft manufacturers Boeing or Airbus having a plane that was used just for one journey and then replaced by another aircraft for the next scheduled flight. SpaceX's revolutionary goal to pave the way for reusable rockets was born. In March this year, that goal was achieved when the first stage of SpaceX's Falcon rocket returned to the Kennedy Space Center, ready to be used again. Pavlik is part of the follow-up step, which aims at converting the Dragon rockets, previously used for carrying cargo, including cargo to the International Space Station, to be able to take crews as well.
I'm basically helping coordinate software for the Dragon spaceship to make sure we can properly build it, launch it, and coordinate with our customers. I joined the software team, and there was a pretty nice connection between my software background and working on software for other companies. When you are building software, there are certain similar aspects among all teams that are building software, the activities that you have to do. So it was actually a pretty good fit.
The first manned Dragon test flight is expected to take place in 2018, with the first manned mission to the moon in the same year. Musk has stated the target of manual flights to Mars within a decade. The Czech was also at the brunt of the rocket program, involved with the high pressure and tense launches.
I started in the role when I was supporting some systems that were helping the launch operations, and now I moved to the team that's building the Dragon software. So basically helping the team to succeed with all of our current and future missions.
While SpaceX has now established its launch credibility, that was not always the case in the early days, with the whole rocket program reportedly just one launch failure away from causing the whole project to fold. Pavlik says there's a clear link between the US companies where he's worked.
It's a really strong vision and what they believe in, and making sure that everything is aligned with that vision. And the innovation in the DA and execution basically on that. And I guess that's probably the most common thing that I would see at all of these companies. And pretty much everywhere in Silicon Valley, that's pretty common that you will find founders with strong vision that they are able to deliver if it's a successful company. For the not successful ones, they will probably fail.
The willingness of US entrepreneurs, companies and employees to take risks, with workers in some cases mortgaging their houses and nearly all they have to make their vision come true, is something Pavlik says is rare in Europe. However, the son of Zlin believes the typical US-style entrepreneurial vision was epitomised in the past by Tomasz Batia, the shoe magnate who founded a multinational empire from the East Moravian city.
If everything went well, if he didn't die too early, and if there wasn't a Second World War, I really believe that the Czech Republic could be a first European Silicon Valley, if you will. I believe the infrastructure was there, the human potential was there, the industry was there, and the motivation was there to really build something big out of City of Zlin, but it didn't happen. Yeah, the rest is history.
David Pavlik speaking there to me, Chris Johnston, in that report which was first aired back in July last year and is somewhat topical given the success of the Falcon rocket in the last day or two. Now it's time for our regular musical feature, Hit of the Century, with Jan Wellinger.
Hit of the Century. Now we introduce the year 1940. During the Nazi occupation, people did not very much feel inclined to sing. On the other hand, singing oftentimes becomes a symbol when society is presented with adversity. Jazz and swing music, the newest style, became symbolic of a call for domestic independence, especially among the student circles. Their generation gave rise to competent professionals who came to permanently embody the jazz-inspired music of the period. One of these individuals was a law student named Arnoš Kafka. He became a jazz singer after the forced shutdown of all Czech universities in November 1939. This attractive young man became an idol for many girls, especially in the year 1940 when the foxtrot "Oh, You Are Sensational" by pianist Leopold Gorbáš from Vlach's orchestra was added to Kafka's repertoire. It seemed that no girl's heart could resist him. The Allen Sister Trio also joined Kafka in addition to Vlach's orchestra. The public was not interested in them being sisters as much as they were interested in their superb singing talents, their promotion of Czech songwriters, and their long-standing cooperation with Vlach's orchestra. Today, with their assistance, we'll have a listen to Gorbáš's foxtrot. After 1940, Gorbáš became a big hit in Czech dance music scene, and his work was popular in many other European countries, even in Nazi Germany during the war.
Na tisíce výrazů, když říct ti smím své vyznání. Znám plno krásných příměrů a obrazů, však o němím, když zřím tě znenadání. Ach, ty jsi úžasná, to dávno vím. To přece řeč jasná, víc nemluví. Já nejsem schopen říci slovo jediné, když tebe vidím, tu je rázem srdce mé. Když s tebou býti smím, víc nemluvím.
If you've got any comments about that music, of course you can vote in the competition or anything else in today's programme, then you can contact us at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely happy to hear from you. But from me, Chris Johnston, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.